So, the Gemara in Baba Kamma explains the fascinating Gemara. It's a Gemara that we have the Daf Yomi just finished yesterday, I think. Nun Tes, Daf Nun Tes. The Gemara explains that a person who, if it's a, you're in a city, if you're in a city that that there's a mageifa, plague is going on, okay, and there's a huge destruction and everything. So what you're supposed to do, you're supposed to go home, and you're supposed to close your doors and lock the doors and stay inside and daven to Hashem, that people are gonna that you should be safe from this mageifa. And one of the concepts is that the concept is that the best place to be is if you're obviously being home, you're hopefully you built a house of kedusha, you built a house of mitzvahs, of chesed and everything, and a house to protect you. But the Ben Ish Chai says something very fascinating, which is says like this. He says a mashal. He says that there was a man, and he's walking in the street. There's a rav or something, and he met the malach. He met the malach, the angel of the who was in charge. What's called the maskus. He's the destroyer. He's the one in charge of this of all of this, of killing that city. And that city, it's there was an outbreak of cholera, a cholera, as they used to say, cholera, it's a cholera, it's a sickness. And he met the angel who's going to go there and he's just run through the city. And he asked the angel, he said, "How many people are you allowed to kill? So how many people like are going to be killed in this plague?" And the angel said 5,000. So lo and behold, it went through the city, and it ended up being 15,000. So the person called up and said, met the angel again and said, "I understand you lied. You said it's going to be 5,000 people that died, and you see 15,000 people died." And the angel said something very powerful. The angel said, "No. I swear that I only killed from my sword, from my sickness, from my outbreak, 5,000 people died. The 10,000 other people that died, they died because of weariness, of panic, of this, tumbling or just being involved and everything. But technically, all what they should have done if they would have kept themselves and they would have stayed in their houses and not be concerned and had a munah, they wouldn't have ever died." So there's a feeling out there many times where is that sometimes, and it's true by sometimes sickness even, sometimes the worry of the sickness is worse than the sickness itself. And what the mashal is that when the mageifa hits, when we're in Tzaris, the best thing we could do is protect ourselves from the outside world. It's a twofold reason. One is because the outside world, all they feed is the negative. They'll never speak positive. They'll never say positive news, right? It's mostly negative, negative, negative. And more so is because when we put ourselves into our own house and we don't allow the outside world to affect us, then we're not going to be affected. We'll see later on now. So how true this is, we are havdalah. We're separated from the rest of the world, but we have to act and seem like and look like someone that is separate from the rest of the world. If our house looks like the rest of the world, so that we're not protecting ourselves from the mageifa, from the plague of the outside world. And our job is to business chazek the house, and as we say, chok vuda basmelach timi, the honor of the basmelach is within. It's because what it means is that because you are who you are, naturally, most people, especially Klaus, for sure, and the Shabbat, they have Taiv and everything. Your starting point is good. If you let the outside world influence you, the outside world impact you or infect you, right? So then you might get caught up in the virus of the outside world, or the megaphone from the outside world. So one of the things we have to do is protect ourselves, is maybe not be so much in, allow the outside world to first of all scare us, which they do, news and everything like that, and more so let's not allow the outside world to creep into our world and not be able to see the difference between what's called Klai Yisrael and the rest of the world. But we'll see there's gonna be a big difference in that. And we're gonna go to the Gemara, the fascinating Gemara that seems very not relevant, but it has a lot of relevance to what we're entering in now, the what's called the it's called Shemais, but it's also Shemais, but the precious of Golos Mitzrayim. And we know the Mitzrayim was very seeped in the Avodah Zarah, and Klai Yisrael had to be there for many years. It happens to be that that there's the Korah Basel, it's called the Korah Basel is the gold being burnt out of the metals to be. So the Gemara Avodah Zarah has a very interesting conversation, and it doesn't seem relevant, but it tends to be quite relevant, especially even to this day. You just have to, instead of saying Malach, instead of saying Avodah Zarah, we could just fill in the blank. Whatever we associate, let's get it back for a second. What is Avodah Zarah? So Avodah Zarah, the way my I heard this from Rav Simcha Wasserman, the son of Rav Chanan Wasserman, he wanted to explain it. He gave a mashal to Avodah Zarah. He said a mashal is like this. It's like in those days, even dating myself, but now it's not even as true. But in those days, let's say you need to go get a camera. You want a new camera, and so you buy yourself a camera. So what did you do? You went to the big department store, which had everything in Manhattan. You went down to Manhattan. There's 5-7 story department stores that had everything you needed. You go there. So you go to the bottom floor of the department store, and you negotiate with the sales clerk. You negotiate for a camera. You get it, and you feel really good about it. You get a really, pretty good price on the camera. And then, you know, everyone's happy. And you finish the sale. And then now you're going to take the elevator up to the top floor. Why? You go up to the top floor. Why? You want to go visit your good friend, the owner of the company. And your friend's the owner of the company. So you walk into the owner of the company's office. And you say, oh, so great. It's an amazing thing. I got this great price on the camera. And the owner, who's your friend, looks at you and goes, what are you, crazy? You went, asked below the sales clerk for a deal. I own the whole company. Should have came to me. I would have got a much better deal. And so the world out there, Akash Baruch Hu is the owner of the whole world. And many times what we do is negotiate. We try to get a good deal on something from the lower clerk at the bottom floor, right? And that's what it's always is that we look at people who say, if only this thing will happen, that thing will happen. So it's true, Chazal got together and they were vato to nullify the Venezuela. So therefore we don't have that same type of taiva that they used to have for Venezuela. But the famous Gemara says that someone was one time making fun, I think it was Rava, Ravasi, I think. I don't remember what it was. Was making fun of Menashe. It was a king who was right there with the Zara. And Menashe picked him and said, if you would be there in my times, you would have picked up your robe and you would have ran with me. The time was very great. Anyway, it was a very, very big desire. But even though we don't have that, what we still have is the root of it, the aspect of how we look at things in terms of with Hashem's involvement or without Hashem's involvement, and it's a good thing to remind ourselves. So the Gemara says actually Mishnah of Ezer. The Mishnah of Ezer says there's a Kaden Baromi. These were non-Jewish philosophers in Roman time, and most of this verb I've got now going forward. I was listening to a Tefah of Shlomo Brevda. So they asked, what happened was is that when the Romans took over, they destroyed the second Beis Hamikdash, and They not only that, they would once in a while they would call in the Jews. They had control. They would call the Jews and they would debate the Jews. And they were very smart people, these Romans, these philosophers, and they would ask like very difficult questions. It's not always difficult in terms of like they were complicated, but difficult because the right answer might not be the right answer, because it doesn't matter what your answer, because they already have, it's what's called, you already have your answer. You just want the other person to say that answer. So the non-Jew asked the Chazal in Rome, if Hashem, we know that Hashem doesn't like Avodah Zarah. That's for sure, right? That's pretty clear. If you read the Torah, there's over and over again that we don't doesn't like to, doesn't you know that don't service another god, don't serve this. It's continuously it's a second commandment of the Sefer Dibros. But why doesn't Hashem just simply get rid of it? If he doesn't like Avodah Zarah, get rid of it. Fair question, right? Get rid of the Avodah Zarah. So Chazal, the Chazal responded that if they would worship something, it's true. If the Avodah Zarah is something that doesn't matter, let's say it's like a little, it's a little wooden statue. So Hashem would take care of that, to get rid of that. It's not a big deal. No one will listen to everything. But most people, they worship the moon, the suns, right? The stars, the mazolas, right? The constellations and everything, astrology, right? And if Hashem would destroy, why should Hashem, why should Hashem destroy the world because of fools? So he says, like Hashem not obligated that he made a world, right? There's this moon, the sun does its job, the moon does its job, everyone does its job. And someone decides that the sun is in charge. So Hashem doesn't need to destroy the world because of that. Hashem doesn't need to say, oh, I guess because someone made the mistake of thinking that the sun's in charge, now the whole world has to destroy. So then the philosophers asked him, said, okay, great, fine. So that's fine. So don't destroy the sun and the moon. But we see many idols out there that never get destroyed, right? They're never destroyed. So why do you destroy the little idols? You see something?
No, I'm sorry.
So, I don't think it's different. So why don't we destroy the things that are small, and leave the sun and moon out? So Chazal answered them and said, no, we can't do that. Why? Because what they'll say is that the sun and moon destroyed little idols. So that's the depth of the idols. So that's how the Chazal answered the Romans who asked the question, the Roman philosopher. Now, this is not the whole answer. It's not even close to being the most accurate answer. It's an answer for in this kind of debate. The Gemara continues and tells a fascinating story. Tells two different things that continue on to happen. So there was a man by the name of Zunin. Let me find him. There we go. Zunin was a Yid. So we're not talking to Goyim anymore. And Zunin went to Rabbi Akiva. And he said this. It's very fascinating. This sounds like right out of like the, you know, someone having a hard time speaking this rough, right? He said, look, both my heart and your heart know that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, there's nothing to it. But he said, how is it possible we see people going into enter a temple, a pagan temple? They have fractured limbs. They leave with the limbs fixed, right? How do you explain that? How do you explain that miracle? And there seems to be a ruach. There seems to be a kayach. You see people that they've been healed. A lot of those are fake, but some of them, right? Everyone gets rid of the, as they say, everyone throws away the crutches. No one ever throws away the prosthetic leg. They can't do that. Can't replace that. But there does seem to be some type of kayach that happens, and we'll see even more soon. Kayach, the people go there and they see they will have a miracle. That sounds not so good for us, right? Because Hashem's saying that Avodah Zarah is bad. Again, so let's put it now at our times. It seems like that certain things that are not the Jewish way always seem to be right. Also, they seem to have good outcomes to it. It's not everything, right? You see that people put their trust in other things besides Hashem, and they're successful, and they're very successful. So what's going on here? Specifically, idol worship. So Rav Akiva says, I'll give you a mushroom. I'll give you an analogy. There was a city. And in the city, there was a man by the name of Yankel. He was the most trustworthy person in the city. He was known as a Nem. He was the person that people used to come. I was just listening to a podcast of this guy, Avi Fishoff. He said that his father was Benny Fishoff. He just got his book, Bava Benny. And he said that his father was so trustworthy that a guy came to him in 30 years ago with $1 million in cash in a case and said, you're the only person in the world I could trust that would to give that money. So remember, these people are trustworthy and safekeeping. And this is the person. Everyone went to him and every person would give the stuff and they would come, they would deposit. Let's say they had something, they had jewels, or they had whatever a suitcase, whatever they needed, they would give this person for safekeeping. And they wouldn't have witnesses, nothing. Everyone trusted him. He was known to be trusted. There's one person who came to town, and he didn't trust him. Even though the whole world trusted him, he only did in front of witnesses. He would only give his items in front of witnesses, which means he didn't even trust him. Now, one time the man forgot, and the guy always would give about witnesses. He forgot, and he gave the person, let's say, 2 diamonds without witnesses. So now the wife of the shomer, the custodian, said, "Come, let us take this opportunity to just keep the article for ourselves. We can deny it to him, right?" And the honest custodian said to him, "What? This because he acted. What are you saying?" He said, "You never trusted us. So why should we trust you? We went out on a limb and we trust him. Now he gave off our witnesses, so he's not going to be able to get it back without witnesses. We should keep it." And which the man, the honest man, said, he said, "Just because that fool acted properly doesn't mean that we should ruin our nemunas and integrity, right?" Well, this is a very powerful thing. Just because everyone saying that this is wrong doesn't mean, right, or is an acts like a fool, doesn't mean that we have to join them and act like that way and becoming like that. And that's what goes back to what we said before about being in the house and keeping the outside world out. So what's the mosh? What's the nimshol? So he says an unbelievable thing that Gemara says. The Akiva says, "Do you know that every time someone has something, they get a sickness, they're in a bad situation, everything. When at the moment that the malach, the angel that is supposed to make sure this, let's say Yankel's chasam is going to get sick, right? So his angel is going to make him sick. He asks before he does, he swears to Hashem. He says that you're not allowed to." Yeah, he makes a shul. He said, he's going to get sick on June 5th through June 12th. You can't get him sick June 4th and he can't be sick past June 12th. But there's a certain time, certain amount, pain, everything is prescribed by Hashem and everything's connected to Hashem. Hashem says, to the extent that the Malach has to now promise that this person's going to get sick. Not only that, he's going to get better at this time by the hand of this so-and-so doctor with this remedy. I don't know. It's because I don't know that when people, that Hashem, when he, even before, that's called the Makkah before the food before the Makkah, he gives the refuah, the hill before the Makkah. When Hashem creates something that's negative, he has the exact timing, plan of action that's going to be out. So there's something to say about the including the shtalos, the lack of shtalos, what you have to do and everything when things happen. Now, what happens? let's say a person has this broken arm, right? And if he comes into the base, the Venezuela, the temple, right? And now he has a problem. It's the exact moment that Hashem made the angel promise that it'll make him better. Okay? So at 12:15 on Tuesday, he walks into that place. And now he has a problem. The angels have a problem. On one side, if they say that, if they heal him, right? Everyone's going to say, oh, look, the great Avodah Zarah, it healed him. If they say, but what should we do? If we don't heal him, we're being over on a shvua. We're being over on our value we made. So they end up doing, they say is that just because he's a fool, that whole ascribe it to Avodah Zarah, it doesn't stop us from doing what we have to do. We promise Hashem that we're going to do it. We have to do it. So the Vart is, again, goes back to it. So we see sometimes we have successes and people put so much effort into things and they all succeed in success and everything. But what they don't realize is it's very likely, it's very possible they could have done none of that stuff, right? And it would have been fine, right? And that's part of the problem. When we look at the world and the world tells you have to do A, B, and C to solve something, sometimes no, Hashem is in charge. Goes back to Hashem's charge. If Hashem's in charge and Hashem has a plan of action for everything, again, it doesn't mean you don't go to the doctor because it says you have to go to the doctor. The doctor will prescribe you everything, will heal you. But the reality is that the starting point of everything is that the over those are, and sometimes Hashem even allows it to be successful because it's not Hashem's job. The way he says this, it's not Hashem's job to say it to prove every fool wrong. It's not our job to prove every forearm. So Hashem will allow that the person will be healed even when he goes over the Zara. We can see it gets deep in this, but there's a famous story that Rav Dessler was at someone's house, someone in London's house, and he wasn't religious. He was actually not, he was anti-God, it sounds like. He was maybe an atheist or something. And he was like, asking Rav Dessler, he said, like, why does Hashem show himself more? Like, Hashem should show us if there's a God in this world, he would let this happen, would that to happen, everything. And if Dessler noticed that on his wall, he had a diploma of someone from a very prestigious music school. I said, whose diploma is that? Oh, it's my daughter's. She's a master musician. She has a degree in everything. So if this is, I don't believe it. Call her down. Let me hear you. Let me hear you play. And the guy gets upset. What are you talking about? She has a poem on the wall. I mean, it's, you know, I don't need to come prove. She doesn't need to come here express some proof to you, Rabbi, if she knows how to play. What do you know about music anyways and everything? So I don't believe it. I don't believe it. He says, it doesn't matter. She has a poem. She doesn't have to come and prove it to every person that walks into the house. So if this is exactly. Hashem doesn't have to prove that he exists, that every person decides that now, today, I need to decide if Hashem, what's called. Hashem's a Neman, Hashem has promised us. That goes back to the whole thing with Tribe, that it was a lot of years, there's a lot of bad things happening, right? And that the Neman is, the belief is that Hashem was going to take them out, and then when they believe that, they were able to go out. So that's the next level of Ezra. Next level of what not to remember when it comes to Avodah Zarah. Hashem has a plan, and many of us sometimes we chase after some false ideas or concepts to solve something when reality is that it would be solved anyways. And then the next thing that happens is there's a question that they asked on the where it ends off. Someone asked, I think it was Rav Yehuda, he asked them a question, he said, but look, this is crazy. There's actually even you see this Goyish nation where whenever there's a drought, they slaughter a kid and lo and behold, rain comes. So how could that be? So again, the Rabbanim said, look, you have to understand something. He said, let me explain something. And this is very important to understand. He said, when it comes to the rest of the world, there was a time where Kadosh Baruch Hu created a world. And then what happened was they were over the desert. And many of them refused to listen, and they got sucked into Avodah Zarah. And Hashem said, you know what? I'm going to warn you. And you better stop. And he makes a marble. And he destroys them. They start again. And what happens? 70 years later, whatever years later, they're ready. Nimrod is ready and building a tower against God. Hashem said at that point, the bottom of the Sfarim all say this. At that point, Akash Baruch Hu changed and made 70 languages. As the Jews later made a separation between Klal Yisrael and the rest of the nations. All the rest of the nations in the world, they don't have a straight connection to God. They have what's called Teva. Teva is that they have a mazel, a malach, a ruach. They have angels and they have people that work, that run the country, right? And that's it's of course Hashem allowing that to happen, but it's different. So by them, the only reality they have is the koyach of Teva. And koyach of Teva is the mazalas and the mut. So they maybe will have, they could be every of us are and it might work for them. So, but Klal Yisrael has to realize that they, Hashem said, no, you're still chosen. You're still taken care of. And that's the part that we have to recognize. When Golas now, we have a long history of Golas, but yet we know that who is the one who is prescribing all of the Golas? It's the same person who made the Shvua, made the Malach who acted out the Golas, swear that at the moment it's time for us to get out, we get out. And he's a Neman, because it's not his job to show the world that he's a Neman. He's proven himself to be a Neman by giving us the Torah, by giving us life itself, by being the owner of the store, per se. He's done it. Now, there's one more interesting, what's called a Zayar in this topic, which is the topic of there's a person, the Zayar brings this down. I couldn't find where it was. I heard this again by Rav Shlomo Breva. And the Zohar says like this. He said there was a person, and this highlights his last point we just said, a person who had a certain, he was crippled. And he was told in the city that he lives, that people that have this machlos, this ailment, they would go into a certain church, they would sleep the night there, and they'd be healed in the morning. And hello, they'd be healed in the morning. And the person decided that he's going to try. And he goes and he goes into this church and he's sitting there and there's 20 other people there and it's hard time to fall asleep. He's can't fall asleep. They all finally fall asleep. He's up. He couldn't fall asleep. He's very uncomfortable being in church in the first place and everything. And all of a sudden he sees an angel. And he sees this angel with this big pot like this or something. And he's going. And he's going from one person to another person. And he's feeding them. And everyone gets a cup. They drink. The guy, when he wakes up, he's healed. And he goes to person number one, person number two, person number three, and person number four. And he's number five. And he comes to number five. And the angel skips him. And goes to number six, seven, eight, nine. He goes on, does the rest of the room. And the angel skips him. So he calls out, and I'm sure if you know him, he's like hilarious. He's like, I don't know if he called him Reb Sutton or Dr. Sutton or Mr. or Honorable Sutton. He said, what happened? And why is he skipping me? So the angel said, aren't you a Jew? I said, yeah. He said, I'm not going to heal you. I'm not going to heal you. So why not? He said, because every one of these people, because they're tapping into a Vezara, the reason, if Hashem says, you know what, you want a Vezara? Fine. You're going to earn all your reward on this world. I'm going to heal you here. This is a concept we know by Pershaim. They get a lot of the reward, a lot of success in this world. Why? So they shouldn't have the next world to come. But you're a Yid. And Akash Baruch Hu has a reason and a purpose for every reason, a reason for why you have the ailment, why you're sick and everything. And that, whatever that is. But the last thing I would do is I would deprive you of by healing you, I would deprive you of your Gan Eden, of your Olam Haba. So I don't want to do that. I'm not willing to do that. I don't have a right to do that and everything. So and this person, Zohar continues to say, that's the people realize is that this is why we understand like Yaakov, when he met love and he was so nervous about his chosen. And even Yaakov all through his life, and many people, they're very nervous. Why? Because sometimes when things go well in this world, right, and it's, you know, too much, and out of the norm, it could be that Hashem is decide on you, I have no longer hope. I remember that one time a person telling me that this person was a very rebellious teenager. And he said the hardest thing that ever happened to him was his father told him, I have nothing left to give you. It's not that he kicked him out. He said, I have nothing left to give you. So the last thing we want from Hashem is Hashem says, you know what? You're on your own in this world. You're doing great in this world. And that's why we see, that's one explanation. We see a lot of very wicked people being very matzliach. They have tremendous atzlacha. They do terrible, terrible things. But it could be they have one or two schusim that Hashem has. So we have to remind ourselves, we have to remember ourselves that, excuse me, at the end of the day, that the main thing that we are actually working for is not in this world. So Mashiach, it's the Mahabas Ganeda. And that's the hope. So what's the opposite of this? What's the schusim? The schusim is what's called bracha, right? The opposite of a zara is to baruch Hashem, you know, thank you Hashem. Whatever you want to say, to every time we make a bracha, every time we give a bracha to someone, what we're saying is that Hashem is in charge, right? If we make a bracha on the food we're eating, is that who gave us his food? Hashem gave us his food. There's a much more deeper thing about bracha that this past week's parasha Vayechi. It's worthwhile to speak out, which is that the bracha of brachas by the words bracha, beis, reish, chaf, or also bechor, it's the same letters, beis, chaf, reish, is 220. So they're all times two. Because a bracha is something, you can't give a bracha to something that there's nothing there. Right? So someone that's Avdei Vazara and he has nothing left in his life, there's no place, no source for bracha. Chayis was called bracha. Chayis was called a nation of bracha. Why? Because as long as there's something to build upon, I can't give a 5'2" person a bracha that should be the center and be a center in a basketball game, you know, for the NBA. He has no shaksa. You see that Yaakov, it seems like even some of the brachas seem a little harsh to his sons, but they're really not. Because what what he's saying is, this is who you are. And if we know who you are, and he could build upon it, you have times to it, right? You have to build upon that. That's what bracha lies. And the truth is that sometimes who we are on a given day, if we would even just multiply it, we'd be quite amazing. But this is a little bit adding of things. Bracha means to add a little bit more onto your life, better for yourself. So that's true. The ultimate bracha is when you give yourself more ruchnis, more spirituality, that's much greater. I just want to end off with a story. It's an unbelievable story. You see where people do keep mitzvahs and they save them. There was in the city of Telz, they were all rounded up in 1941. The most of them were actually killed right away. They were shot. But there was one young 16-year-old who ran away from Telz, and she went from house to house, begging people to hide her. And she lived like that for 3 years on the run. When she was 19, she found a home with a non-Jew who took her in. It was very nice. She was very nice, and the non-Jew took her in, and she left her in a little closet crawl space, and she would hide there. She would stay there all the whole day in a tiny space, and at night what she would do is she was responsible for all the mending. Her chores were to mend all the clothing and stuff like that, whatever pants, shirts, sweaters, whatever needed repaired, she would repair it, and that was her job. A side note: some of these people, I remember, I used to learn with a person named Yanko Kornwasser in Los Angeles. He was a very extremely successful person, like to the extent like I'm talking about in the hundreds of millions of dollars. It's part of the story to know that. He used to give us like $10 to come learn with him from us. And he one time turned to me and my friend, and he said, "You see all this money I have?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "You should know that when I was hiding in a bunker in during the war, it was so stuffy. It was so like I couldn't move most of the day. And at 1 o'clock at night, for 15 minutes, I would get a free, I like they let me run around in the yard. That's all they let me. And then I would have to go back in." And I said, "I remember then I would have given almost all my money for one more minute of fresh air." So the bracha of even 1 minute of fresh air, you know, when you don't have it, it's quite amazing. So this girl is, you know, Baruch Hashem being hidden, and it's pretty good. And she always would mend. And on Thursday nights, she used to work double hard to finish up everything. Why? So she didn't have to do anything on Friday night. Comes Friday night, and one Friday night, and a group of people are, the woman is about to leave. She knows that a coat sleeve was ripped. So now all of a sudden she needs something to fix. So she calls her this girl and says, "You have to, you know, please fix this, my coat." And the girl says, "I really can't do it. It's Shabbos." Now this is a pretty bad thing to say to someone who's on the risk of their own life, is protecting you. She's like, "It's my Shabbos, I can't do it." And the woman gets very upset and says, "If you don't sew the coat, you're going to be kicked out of my house." And she said, "Nope, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do it. I'm not giving up my Shabbos. I'm, you know, if I have to, I'll have to leave." And the woman starts screaming at her and kicks her out of the house. And it's really weird because she was really very nice up to this point. And like, you'd think she'd be understanding, but whatever, she gets kicked out. And this girl leaves and she walks out. She has nowhere to go. So she hides in like this field, among the stalk of weeds. But it's a beautiful night, and it's the first time she's out on Shabbos. And she starts, you know, she says the Chodaydi, she sings, and she's like, she actually feels more free than she ever felt in the last year because she has a place to go. And Baruch Hashem, at that point, no one was chasing her and everything, and she was happy. And then suddenly, she falls asleep in the field, and suddenly she gets woken up, and she hears someone coming, and she gets very nervous. And she realizes the woman whose house, right, was running towards her. And the woman says to her these words: "You have no idea what just happened. You can't imagine. You know, you don't know how powerful your Shabbos is." And this is what's happened after calming down. She said, "Mom was like, right after a few minutes after you left the house, after I kicked you out, I heard an incredible loud banging on doors. And as soon as it opened, Nazi soldiers burst through, German shepherds barking and sniffing and leading the way. The Nazis tried to intimidate and terrorize me. What do you think? That we're going to figure out you're hiding a Jewish girl? Right? Where is she? We're going to shoot her. And then we're going to shoot you." And they broke down my house. They looked everywhere for me, but they couldn't find you. And obviously they had to leave without them. But they are gone, the woman concluded. It's a miracle. Had I not thrown you out, they would have killed you and then killed me. Your Shabbos saved our lives. Shabbos is the gift, as we say, Kiyeshmer Shabbos. Shabbos is the, right? Kiyeshmer Shabbos, Kiyeshmerenu. If I was saved God the Shabbos, Hashem will safeguard us. So the bottom line is, when it comes to all this stuff, this whole conversation of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, maybe, is there Avodah Zarah in the world these days? I think there's a lot of false ideas out there in the world. But there's a lot of people that want to believe in a lot of things that have nothing to do with Yiddishkeit. And if there's a crazy world out there, which the world's getting crazier and crazier, the way to protect yourself is to have to close up our house from the outside world, from the outside influences. Don't believe in the false idols. Don't remember that Kleisel is completely different. Kleisel has this direct line to the owner of the whole world, Kosh Baruch Hu. That's what we daven. When we do mitzvahs, when we get bracha, we keep working on that. We keep growing as Klal Yisrael. Then we should zeichet the Mashiach here. Remain on me. Have a good.